Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Rock Talk with Dr. Cropper. On today's episode, we're going to be discussing Jimi Hendrix Experience's Electric Ladyland album, their third and final release together, which came out October 16th, 1968. Just want to thank you for stopping by. I know the amount of alone time it takes to get through a podcast, even one as short as this one will likely be, isn't always easy to come by these days, so I appreciate you entrusting me with yours. As always, I encourage you to follow the show on any and all social media platforms, but especially Instagram. Handles are listed in the description. And if you feel so inclined to leave a rating and review, if that's an option, wherever you're listening, those are very helpful to me. And if you're interested in a bit more content, consider subscribing to Rock Talk Plus at the link in the description. So we discussed the first Jimi Hendrix Experience album for its 55th back last spring, May 2022. And then we discussed their middle album, Axis, Bold as Love, in December of last year. And now we arrive at this one, which has always been my favorite of theirs. I guess when I was in university, I bought the three albums and some of the live stuff, and this one was my favorite of the three right from the jump. But I had it had been years actually since I listened to it in full. I only listened to it once in preparation for this last night, since these are sort of rapid reaction style. And to be quite honest, I have to be on the floor at work in 59 minutes, so this is going to be definitely an express episode. But I still have to have a shower and eat some lunch. Anyway, so I considered this for my top 25 albums list last August, but I don't know if I was just in the wrong mood that day. I got through the first song or two and cut it off. It's like, yeah, I don't think this one's going to make the cut. I enjoyed it much more last night. And if I redid my list, it might make the cut. I think it is rightly hailed now in hindsight. At the time, it got kind of a mixed reception, but I think now it's rightly hailed as one of the best albums from the psychedelic era. And what's cool about it is it reconciles what were sort of viewed at the time to be two disparate streams of rock music, that being the psychedelic rock and blues rock. And we're going to talk about the Rolling Stones' Beggar's Banquet for its 55th at the beginning of December, and that marked, and then lots of ink has been spilled about this, it marked the Stones' shift back to blues-based rock after their psychedelic experimentations. And it was like, you know, one or the other, we're giving up psychedelia and going back to our roots. And I think Electric Ladyland is great because it proves that actually you can do both. And I think I would say that continued on Led Zeppelin's debut, released in January 69. So we'll talk about it for its 55th early next year. I'm kind of hoping it'll work out that it'll be episode 200, because I like for the milestone numbers to be a special topic. But that might take a bit too much manipulating of the schedule to squeeze like 25 albums in between now and then. Anyway, that's for me to worry about. So Zeppelin sort of continued that, but yeah, I guess I would say they continued it. Their psychedelic influences became much more muted after the debut, and really only popped up again in earnest a bit on Houses of the Holy, but I think Electric Ladyland does a great job of merging those two thought to be disparate streams within rock as the 60s turned into the 70s. Also, if you listened to either of the previous Hendrix episodes from last year that I mentioned a second ago, you'll remember that one of my main critiques was the kind of heavy-handed production from Eddie Kramer, and kind of overdoing it with psychedelic effects and studio trickery that sounds a bit dated when you're listening to it now in the 2020s. And I say that as someone who likes psychedelic music and has from the time I was little, and am, you know, a proponent of the psychedelic experience if you're able to get yourself in the right headspace to get what you should get out of it. But I do think a lot of times in the mid late 60s, artists got a little carried away with the studio trickery, and not everyone executed it as well as, say, the Beatles, who a lot of them were taking their cues from. And because of that, I've sort of arrived at the place where I far prefer Hendrix's live work to his studio work. I think it was a better showcase for him. And, you know, given the technology at the time and stuff, I think he translated well to that more extended format where he could just be unfettered and do what he does on the guitar. But I think this album is a much better channeling of his genius into the studio format. And perhaps not coincidentally, it's the only of the three Hendrix Experience albums where he is credited as the sole producer. And I think he did a really good job sound quality wise. It's fantastic. A lot of the 67, 68 psychedelic albums sound kind of thin and tinny. And this one has a really nice, warm, thick bottom end. This album's also home to some of his best and most popular songs. Of course, his cover of Bob Dylan's All Along the Watchtower. And I love, someone asked Dylan what he thought of Hendrix's cover of it, sort of expecting him to think, oh, you ruined it, like playing like that over it and everything. And he said, oh, I love it. Like, that's how I would have done it if I could play like that. So I always thought that was a nice, humble response from him. Voodoo Child Slight Return, which is actually so Voodoo Child, the long version, which was cut live at a club one night during the sessions for this album, might actually be my favorite Hendrix song. I love that it's looser than the Slight Return, which they cut in the studio the next day, I believe, if memory serves. Anyway, I love both, but I love the loose nature of the longer live version. And it and Slight Return, actually, well, and Watchtower, are an example of one of the defining characteristics of this album, I think, and that is the variety of guitar tones that Jimmy was able to achieve, which I think is one of his kind of calling cards generally. Right away, you can tell just from the tone, like, oh, that's Jimmy. And I think this is probably his best, most extensive and best channeled showcase of that aspect of his genius. Like, in terms of the actual notes being played and just the variety of sounds, I think this album is as good a pick of as any, of just a showcase of everything the electric guitar could be as an instrument and as the marquee instrument in rock. I love the squeal that he gets on Voodoo Child, the long one, after the line about the hummingbird, and it hums so loud, and then he gets just a phenomenal sound that cuts right to the soul. And then each of the solos on Watchtower having a very different tone, and then of course the great use of the wah on Voodoo Child Slight Return. I think Crosstown Traffic is a really fun, concise little rocker. Same with Little Miss Strange, which Noel Redding actually sings. Burning of the Midnight Lamp is another example of a really cool guitar tone. Another thing I noticed, is kind of a tangent, but I've noticed on Spotify that all of the Jimi Hendrix Experience stuff is all just lumped in under Jimi Hendrix for who the artist is, which I don't think is right. And I'm surprised that Mitch Mitchell and Noel Redding's estates have gone along with that. But, he wasn't a solo artist at this point. Yeah, it was called the Jimi Hendrix Experience, but that's what it was called. It wasn't just called Jimi Hendrix. I don't think anyone would dispute that he was the most important member, but the other two weren't just random schmucks. They had a hand in it too, particularly Mitch Mitchell. So that's a thing that I don't think is so great. But in terms of Electric Ladyland, fantastic production, thematically really cool. I saw it described as just like a great window into Hendrix's head, and like anyone else's head, it can be a bit messy and scattered, but I think this is the purest, most unadulterated, but also most polished and best channeled expression of the full breadth and depth of Hendrix's genius as purely an instrumentalist and a creator more broadly, and as his live stuff in the last little bit of his life. So basically just under 2 years after the release of this, because he died, this is October 16th, 68, and then he passed September 18th, 1970. This album and the subsequent live stuff really showed where he could have gone had he not passed prematurely. And one of my friends in the Zeppelin community, my friend Jim, who I've mentioned several times, I think it was it in discussion with him? Maybe not, actually, but I could definitely see, had he lived on into the 70s, him, collaborating with Miles Davis, for example, and getting into some really neat acid jazz fusion stuff, which is too bad he didn't get the chance to do that. But Electric Ladyland's a great peek at what might have been. But even without that, it's great in its own right. So that's all for today. I gotta hit the showers. Hope you enjoyed this. And next will either be Grateful Dead Wake of the Flood 50th anniversary or Stone's Hackney Diamonds review. And then we'll also do a 1989 Taylor's Version episode. We got The Who Quadrophenia 50th anniversary coming up. Lots of good stuff. And some of those will be more full-length episodes. I just had to clear the line here. So, as I said at the beginning, encourage you to follow the show so you can be kept abreast of all the latest happenings, and consider subscribing if you're interested in a bit more content. Leave a rating and review if that's an option wherever you are listening. And that's about it. Have a great weekend. Go Bucks. On the road at Wisconsin tomorrow night. And see you next week. Class dismissed.